Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Red Men Radio, the Liverpool podcast from us, me, Paul Machin, and this week, Ross Chanley of the Red Men TV. Those of you who don't know Ross, you should do by now, but he's the guy who makes our Twitter account the wonderful place that
sometimes.
It is. Sometimes. Occasionally gets things wrong, but we all do, we're all human, but your hits are far greater than your misses.
Yep. On Twitter, yeah.
Right, we're going to kick off question. Then it comes from Kyle William Hamilton on our Facebook group. If you are a subscriber to the RedmenTV.com, you can join that group and then you can send in questions via that. I mean, you can just send them in via Twitter.
Or you can subscribe and be in that group.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. There you go. Ross gets it. Yeah. Ross gets it. So it says, make an England starting 11 with Liverpool players past and present. What team would you pick and how far do you think they get in a World Cup? Ross Chanley, what have you gone for?
So,
can I preface this with how recent bias, how recently biased is your team?
Well, it was at first and then I quickly realised that I'd have to put David James in goal and then thought, I'm just going to change the rules, if there were rules. So originally I picked him and thought, I should just pick it on people that I've seen play.
Ooh.
And then thought, no, actually.
Because it would have meant David James being in goal.
Yeah, and then I thought.
As opposed to Ray Clements.
Yeah. So I've gone for Ray Clements, and for the same reason, I initially had Nathaniel Clyne at right back. I thought, I don't like that, so I went for Phil Neal.
Okay.
Centre-halves, Carragher, Phil Thompson.
Ooh. Yeah, that's what I've gone for.
Left back, I had to go for Milner because I couldn't think of anyone else, and then Alan Kennedy.
Okay.
I gone for a 4-4-2 diamond here.
Ooh, the diamond,
yeah,
I like it.
Yeah, so Gerrard playing deep.
Okay.
Beardsley at the top of the diamond.
That's a shout. Oh, that's well better than one I've done. Go on, carry on.
Can't change your mind now.
I'm changing it. It's just fucking stupid. I've just totally overlooked. Go on, carry on.
Steve McManaman on the right wing.
Yeah.
Barnsley on the left.
That's correct.
Yeah. And then I got stuck up top because there's some people I haven't seen play. So, for example, Roger Hunt, I could have had in there. And I thought, I've got no right to put him in because I've not even seen clips of him.
Yeah.
I don't think so. As much as it killed me, I went for Owen.
Yep, partnered.
And Fowler, because he's the only reason that initially I support Liverpool and watch football was down to him.
He was my favourite player as a kid growing up. Now, yeah, very similar now, particularly because I've realised the error of my ways. I put Phil Neal at left back, to shoot on him, because I didn't put Alan Kennedy in, because again, stupid, and I'm not going to rewrite that. But I wanted to shoe on either Rob Jones in at right back, because he should have been, if you don't know, he was the best right back England had, best right back Liverpool had, and just injury problems kept him out. And the reason why Gary Neville is so highly lauded and the reason he played in so many international tournaments is simply because Rob Jones got injured. That's the only reason, because England just were, he was the next best right back option that the country had. Failing that though, Trent, who's played one game for England or whatever.
Well, I thought current players wouldn't be a thing either. Okay. We decided in the office, otherwise you could have had a couple of people.
Well, to be fair, I come very close. I put Gerrard in the midfield. I hadn't called it a diamond, but I put Keegan as a more advanced player in that regard. I did have McManaman on the left and to shoehorn in because I couldn't think of anyone for the left wing.
Okay,
John Barnes.
You've been singing World in Motion all
I've
week.
I've been singing World in Motion. I have played World in Motion every single day, several times for the last week, and I completely forgot John Barnes. He's in now, I've rectified that, but I would have meant Sterling on the right wing in a 4-4-2. But then, and that's the problem, is that that's going to make me look stupid because everyone hates Raheem Sterling at the moment. I went for Owen and Heskey up front.
Okay.
Because I went for a team that functions, whereas Fowler and Owen could not play together.
Fowler's just my favourite player of all time. I actually went for a manager as well because I thought that might be a thing.
Ooh.
So it was a toss-up between, obviously, Keegan, who's been England manager, and Roy Hodgson. So I went for Mike Bassett instead.
Okay, solid.
Because Ricky was in last week and thought, I'll be nice.
Okay, cool. Well, let us know then if you're watching, whose team do you think was the best, even though they're basically almost identical? Yeah. It's effectively, who do you think was a better striking partnership of Owen and Heskey or Fowler and Owen? And
you changed yours halfway through the
Keegan, or Beardsley is the guy behind the front two. Okay, just briefly then, what we're going to be getting through this week, we're going to be talking a little bit more about Nabil Fekir and some news in brief. Then we're going to talk about Jordan Henderson and how he seems to be winning people over at the World Cup, which is great. We've got a little bit from our Liverpool Latest podcast, and we're going to be answering loads of your questions that you've sent in via the aforementioned Facebook group and by Twitter as well. Let's kick it off then. So Nabil Fekir's agent came out. And just relit our fire.
Yeah.
Which is fine, except it's not. I'm so bored of talking about this player. He's intimated that it's not over yet. The story's not over, Ross. The reason it's not all done and dusted, the reason it won't go away is because something might yet happen. What's your take on that?
I'm getting to the point where I don't care anymore. I've emotionally invested too much of my time and my life into this deal. I know we spoke about it the other week over the weekend, it was, and the build-up to it was going to happen. Refreshing Twitter every 5 minutes. Liverpool were tweeting on the hour, every hour, but nothing to do with Nabil Fekir. Melissa Reddy, Paul Joyce had all confirmed that you think it's going to be done, and it just seems to be dragging on. And it's like, I'm not bothered either way anymore. I just want closure. I don't know, that's too much to ask for. I'm happy. I've got other things to occupy me, since when that was on, the World Cup wasn't on, so you don't have a distraction. Now I can just switch off and go and watch 6 hours of footy a day, which I'm fine with.
Yeah.
In terms of the player himself, we did so much work on him that week and watching so much, there's no denying his quality and his ability, but I'm just kind of like,
I talked about it on the news show on today as we're recording, but Tuesday to anyone who's listening to this or watching this on a different day. I thought it was just an intelligent PR move from his agent, just to keep people talking about it, keep his name out there, and also maybe sow a little bit for potential other suitors.
Yeah.
You know, if your guy's now kind of been hung out to dry a little bit by this deal collapsing, you probably need to get him out of Lyon. Lyon will be willing to accept an amount of money. We know this at this point, and there's probably you could probably make a reasonable approximation. It's about 55 million quid. If he says this and he comes out and says it's still on, it's a possibility, he might be engineering a situation whereby another club thinks we'll nip in here and we'll get this done, and we'll nip him in underneath Liverpool's nose. As opposed to it being a situation where Liverpool have stone cold walked away from this deal because of the fitness issues and whatever. So there's that. And I was talking to you in the office about this. I've just done press box and LFC TV with Dave Maddock, who has become the man of the transfer window. And he, you know, his stance is, you know, we didn't talk about it too much in depth, but his stance is what we've seen from him on Twitter, was that he believes it's possible that Liverpool might yet go back after his involvement in the World Cup. And in that regard, looking at the story from the other side, you can see how there was a very short time scale in which to get this deal over the line before he went away, you know, that he was going to be allowed to work within, because of the complications with getting the second opinion on the knee and what have you, and Liverpool probably having to put more thought into it. You know, it's not a right sound, this is all fine, there's your money, get it done. It's like, we probably do need to just have a little bit more of a think about it before we commit. We still like the guy, we still think he's the right fit for Liverpool, but at £55 million, that doesn't become, it's not a bargain anymore. That's actually a bit more of a risk. So I hope we do. You know, honestly, from what I've seen, and I'm quite happy for us to get it over the line. If Liverpool are happy with it, then I'm happy with it.
Yeah, it's all conflicting reports. It's hard to understand of what's going on. The one thing for me was that Olas was adamant from the start that it would be done after the World Cup, mm-hmm. and whether he's obviously playing games and being a business guy, and
yeah.
fair enough, fair play to him. But then Liverpool haven't come out and said anything either, which is like, yeah. we've seen with Virgil van Dijk, you know, we're not interested in the player, but then we've gone and got him.
Well, we did with Mahrez in January. We yeah. come out and said, you know, that it was known that yeah. Liverpool weren't interested. And we made a bit of a joke about it, didn't we? How
it's done.
That, well, no, more like Liverpool were good, rather than tapping people up, we were going to reverse tap people up by saying every player's name that we weren't interested in.
Yeah.
And then if you were left, and we hadn't denied an interest in you, that meant it was on. That meant it was on. So it's given me a slightly more hope this last couple of days that this might yet become a thing, but not so much that I'm going to lose my head over it, because there's no sense at all. Nick Pope, then, he's being background checked. Now, you guys did a bit on this on the Reds Transfer Roundup show with Steve. Yeah. What was the general consensus?
Okay. It was a bit mixed. It's like... The way the discussion went was obviously the Oblak and Allison thing's looking further and further away at the minute. Mm-hmm. So you go and get the best in the next bracket, and he's potentially one of them. You know, at 26, he's got Premier League experience. I had my stats before, but...
If you want them stats, go over to the website and watch the Transfer Roundup. Or listen, because the podcast
is on. I don't know, it's just not the wow factor. I know you had Melin last week, and she said the next goalkeeper has to be a statement and stuff, and... I agree with that. I've said this all along. If you struggle to find decent goalkeepers nowadays, and if someone on the market, just go all out and get them, because you're in danger of putting yourself in trouble for 3-4 years.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think this is why like the Fekir stuff is what it is. I mean, I know he's not got tons of like international experience, and he's had a couple of good seasons. He's a bit of a, like, you know, he's not been world class for years and years and years. But you can see what you're getting in by him. You can see he's an upgrade on a lot of what we do in midfield in terms of the offensive stuff. You've seen what we've done with Virgil van Dijk, and you can see with the goalkeeper situation as well. The issue we've got, I can't remember where I've said this, but I think to paraphrase Jürgen Klopp on centre-halves last summer, there's not many goalkeepers better than the goalkeepers that we've got. Because people will do exactly the same as they did with the centre back thing. People will laugh. They will laugh heartily at the thought that there aren't many goalkeepers better than Loris Karius, old smoke hands, as Steve would call him, and, you know, Mignolet and Danny Ward. But we see now what Klopp meant about the centre halves. It's that we're not Fulham, and we're not Burnley, and we're not Everton, and we're not, you know. If we want to improve Liverpool, it's going to cost a lot of money, and there's a very, very small pool of players who will, there's no guarantees, but as close to guaranteedly come in and improve what Liverpool do. And that's the issue, is that, okay, maybe we're in a situation this summer where there's a couple of them who might be around and about. People say Oblak, but I don't think Oblak is. You know, I think people say it like, because we know his name.
Yeah,
he's somehow available, and maybe there's a release, he's often release clause stuff or whatever. The Alisson stuff is another one. Is he good? You know, is he so good?
I've seen him three times and not been overly convinced of.
I've seen his, you know, I've seen some of the saves he's made. I've seen him make strings of saves. Same with Oblak. You know, his highlight reel looks absolutely phenomenal. And I made a point actually of watching Karius as one from Mainz, just to see if, you know, because if he looked just as good. And no, he never. just to clarify, he didn't look quite as good. But the thing about this is the situation Liverpool are in. You are going to make that statement goalkeeper signing. You're going to have to spend upwards of 50 million quid on a goalkeeper, and it's such a difficult position, because look, Loris Karius was 90 minutes away from being absolutely nailed on Liverpool's goalkeeper for the next couple of seasons at least, and he had an absolute shocker. Circumstances around the concussion thing, I think, again, should be always taken into account in that regard, but this is what happens with goalkeepers. You can spend that money on a goalkeeper and they can be absolutely destroyed in 90 minutes of football. Yeah. Look at, if David De Gea did what he did in that Spain-Portugal game in the final of the World Cup, he would never be allowed. The Spanish public would never allow him to play for Spain again. I know people who are Spanish fans. The Spanish media is saying it, and it's you know, my brother-in-law's not Spanish, but there's a long story why he takes Spain as his national team, and he actually really pays attention. He watches all the games. He's mad into it.
Pablo Machin.
Yeah, Pablo Machin. But no, he doesn't think David Hay is good enough. And it's like, well, I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like Pepe Reina all day. And I'm like, nah, I don't. Like, I disagree.
Yeah.
But the point is, these opinions exist out there. I don't think it's... Just bringing it back to Nick Pope, he's fine, isn't he?
It doesn't wow me, and I don't think when you look at that, everything you just said, if he came into Liverpool side, would he start every game?
I'd rather go, and I've never been one of the people who's banged the drum for Kasper Schmeichel.
Okay,
but I would go and buy Kasper. I'd rather us go and buy Kasper Schmeichel, if I'm honest. You know what I mean? If we were going to buy a goalkeeper from the Premier League who was available, I'd rather us go for him. And I've never said that before. No. I just think he's just, ultimately, he's not as good as his dad. And if you want to be, you know, and there's comments we've had on the Facebook page there. You know, it's a really long, and I'm sorry I didn't put it in the podcast agenda this week, but you need an elite goalkeeper.
He's a Premier League winning goalkeeper as well.
Well, he is, yeah. No, that'd be a factor. Here's the thing on Alisson. This is his last season. That season just gone was his breakout season.
Yeah,
he was understudy to Wojciech Szczęsny prior to that. Yeah, can I just draw everyone's attention, because there's people who will go, well, he's been really good. I don't care what people say about Wojciech Szczęsny. And look, I think has he ended up at Juventus? Is he going to be Juventus' first choice goalkeeper next season
by default because Buffon's retired? Yeah,
yeah. I watched Wojciech Szczęsny, who was relegated to Arsenal's under-23 side, from the first-choice goalkeeper to the under-23's goalkeeper, and I watched him at Anfield, and he was fucking horrendous against Liverpool's kids. And this is the guy who Alisson's unseated. He's had one amazing season, and it has been an amazing season, by the way. And obviously he's the Brazil national goalkeeper, which is a thing. I don't know. I just don't think any of these lads... Like the Nick Popes and the Jack Butlands and Alisson. Oblak is the only one I think who's consistently proven himself, if I'm perfectly honest.
But that's the problem of there's no one else out there who you can go and get out of. There's five world-class goalkeepers that are out there at the minute. David De Gea just signed a new contract for £350,000 a week, and there's a reason why it's £350,000 a week. It's because they'd be screwed if they sold him.
He's worth a striker's wage to them.
Oh, yeah.
Because he wins them as many games as many games as a centre forward does. But you take my point. He wins. He is the best at what he does, and that's what you've got to do, is to keep all of those players. It's a tricky one. It's a very tricky one. It's the biggest test, I think, in terms of transfers that this manager's had to face since he's come in. Because ultimately, it's the only genuinely specialist position left.
Yeah.
Because you look at what our buying policy is fluidity, and it's adaptability, and it's the ability to play in more than one position. Every single player in our team, with the exception of probably Andy Robertson and Dejan Lovren, but then I'll caveat Dejan Lovren with he can play both sides of the centre-back pairing for the centre-back, which is all right. Everyone else can play in more than one position. Goalkeepers are goalkeepers, and unfortunately, the way we play football, as I said, we're not a mid-table Premier League team where you just get in a lad who's dead agile and he's dead good at making saves. It was a noticeable difference once we got Karius properly embedded into the team and how we played with him and Virgil van Dijk, with a centre-back and a goalkeeper pairing that understood our method of play. We were significantly better for having that, because, let's be honest, you could go out and buy Mignolet, you could just keep Mignolet, or you'd go and buy... For every goalkeeper you buy, you're just as likely to end up with another Simon Mignolet, and that's why it's so difficult.
That's the problem as well. If Mignolet's going, what do you do with Karius then? Because the next person you bring in, in my mind, has to be better. But putting Karius onto the bench will just destroy him even more. And Steve said a couple of times, of what do you do with him now? Because if his head goes, then
a lot of this, I think, depends on how highly we rate Danny Ward and how highly we rate Camille Grabara. Mm. And I don't think Grabara's going to come in, but I mean... Do you think Danny Ward is good enough to compete with Karius? Because I've got no... If we think he's good, and I like Danny Ward from what I've seen of him, I've got no problem with us reversing the roles from last season. You start Karius, and you make Ward your Champions League goalkeeper or whatever, and then you see who's the best fit for how you play as the season progresses. And if Karius rediscovers his best form or gets better... then fine. It's not cost you anything.
No, but if Danny Ward would have played more than one game last season. No, if he thought anything of him, that's really concerned.
Yeah, and that's been. I agree in that. That's been my logic on it too. Yeah. If I'm perfectly honest, but first for me, from what I've seen of both, rather than spend £20 million on Nick Pope, who has had a good season to be sure, but. You know, Danny Ward had a good season the season before, albeit not at Premier League level.
This is the first transfer window where I've just kind of been like, go and get who you want, because there's transfers such as Andy Robertson, where we all questioned it, and you kind of go, actually, you can make something from nothing. I know he's not nothing, but they've seen something in him to go, actually, you'll fit what we do. And if whoever it is, even if it's Nick Pope, then I'm kind of all right with it. But London, not so much, because you seem to make mistakes. But like when I was researching... Nick Pope today for the transfer show, I typed in Pope mistake or Nick Pope mistake, not Pope.
Lots of black smoke.
There was nothing.
All right.
So I was looking for a weakness.
Not just like no child molestation scandals. Yeah. Instead, like
the history. I'm sure he has done like throughout his career. The other thing that concerned me with him was he's been on 7 loans.
Yeah.
And it's like, why has no one picked up on him sooner than that? Because he's 26.
Well, this is the thing.
He's later for a goalkeeper. Yeah, I understand that.
It happens, doesn't it? And you know, sometimes people don't get a chance because they don't get a chance. And sometimes people get a chance and it's all they needed to kick on. Particularly, that's the other thing with the goalkeeper situation. You can't prove yourself good enough as a goalkeeper unless you're playing footy.
Yeah.
And that's maybe where Danny Ward's fallen down as well. Is that there's just, you know, we had Mignolet. We owed it to Simon. Maybe there's a degree to which we owed it to Simon Mignolet because, you know, he didn't spit the dummy out and he worked hard. And maybe that was to keep him. We couldn't afford to have a Simon Mignolet go from being our first choice goalkeeper to being to playing the under 23s.
Yeah, because Carrick's got injured. Something you're relying on.
Exactly.
Mignolet's attitude.
Exactly. So, a tricky one. I'd be interested to see how it develops as we move on. For the last thing of news in brief, it's been reported that Daniel Sturridge's asking price is being set at around £15 million. You know, it was 30 probably in January. I would be laughing my tits off if Liverpool got £15 million for Daniel Sturridge.
Yep, as would I. I love Daniel Sturridge, but he doesn't fit our system. Everyone knows his injury record is terrible. He went out on West Brom to go and prove himself and try and get the England squad. Didn't work out very well for him, which is why his asking price has been slashed in half by the look of it. I wish him all the best for the future, but I just you can't see a future for him at Liverpool Football Club at all.
It's a damn shame because he's so talented. Yeah. He's such a talented footballer. And he needs to go to a football club that totally understands his physical needs. And West Brom was a fucking stupid decision. Stupid. Ridiculous.
He's got family around that area, though,
hasn't he? Look, he's a Brummy, isn't he? You know, by all accounts, so I get it. But in terms of like a... You consider so many of his injury problems were exacerbated under Roy Hodgson in England.
Yeah,
you know, you go into another one of those type of managers, whether it was, you know, briefly Tony Pulis and then obviously Alan Pardew, and beyond. He needs to go somewhere. He's just going to respect the fact that you can't really train. But if you can get him on the pitch for 30 games a season, he'll probably score you 10 goals. And that 10 goals, when you look at who scored 10 goals in the Premier League last season, not many people. And the ones who did, you're talking about that fella, Glenn Murray, scored double figures goals. You know what I mean? It's a pretty rare commodity. So, you know, there should be takers. There'll be someone willing to take a punt on Sturridge, I hope. But hopefully, for his sake, I hope he gets the good move and gets a good move.
America, isn't he? He's got America written all over him.
Yeah, I think he'd absolutely
I would do if I was him as well.
Yeah, why not? Well, if you're gonna be injured and not play,
be in America,
you might as well be in Miami. That's all I'm saying.
Another 4 months out, I've got a beach again.
Oh shit. Rather than having to swim around the Albert Dock, which is
or Birmingham,
or just Birmingham. Yeah, more transfer news in depth and detail. I think we've actually done that in fairly reasonable depth and detail. So trust me when I say that there's more depth and detail on the redmentv.com than I mean it.
Hot Rian Brewster talk on that.
Hot Rian Brewster talk. It's no longer illegal because he's 18. Also, you talk about the goalkeeping situation, more on the Fekir stuff as well. Anything else?
There was a young Brazilian lad, Paqueta, 20-year-old midfielder, Brazilian. He's highly rated in Brazil, and I think Real Madrid and City were after him as well. Okay. Been linked with him. It's just all about Brazilians.
Amazing. Fantastic. So, yeah, get over to the RedmenTV.com and sign up. We will have a little clip from another thing along those lines in a minute. But first, Jordan Henderson. During the plaudits, we got a question from Gaz Roach, who said, will last night's performance make non-Liverpool fans see that Henderson is a good player? And LFC Mav said on the Twitter, can we please put the Henderson can't pass myth to bed? This is a major point. All other clubs' fans, as well as some of ours, need to take now on board and cement in their brain. That was the most pleasing thing about the England game for me last night.
Yeah.
Was nobody came out at the base level. Nobody came out and went, Jordan Henderson was shit. And in fact, quite the opposite. There were pundits out there, Martin O'Neill, like in particular, going out of the way to big up his game. Great.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to change the mindset of opposition fans, though. I think there's obviously an agenda, a narrative of what he can and can't do.
People think he's Tom Cleverley. That's the problem. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, there's just a generation of English players who aren't 20 goal a season or 20 assists a season and aren't barely crunchers, you know, in the typical old school style. And as such, people just don't get on with them, and people immediately lump them all in together and write them off.
It's not just his physical attributes, it's his role within the team. I think 13-14 was box to box, and he was that crunching tackles, getting in everywhere, and then he's changed for Liverpool and for England. His job is to keep possession of the ball and get it out to the wings. And some people like Slayton go, no, he never passes forward, and the sideways Henderson thing. Well, he proved last night on a couple of times that Martin O'Neill highlighted that he did. But then I saw someone else go, well, he doesn't do it every time. Well, no, because if he did that every time, he'd give possession away, and then he'd also slag him off for giving possession away.
Yeah, yeah.
He's supposed to recycle the play and give it to people to create stuff, or if it's on, he will play it.
Well, this is the point, exactly that, is that people, no one ever goes on about Busquets about how he doesn't score enough goals, by the way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. There's a respect for the roles within the team, and I think it's a very misunderstood one. I think what was intelligent by Southgate was playing Dyer in there and then playing Henderson. I know Henderson was given the extra bit of time of recuperation after the European Cup final, but that actually, I think, worked in his favour because people got to see Eric Dyer in the role and then Jordan, and the difference is stark. Dyer's a centre-half playing at DM, and I think he's got a role. I think there'll come a time when England need to properly shut a game down, and I think having them two in midfield, I think, would be a good option. Or, you know, putting Dyer into the back three, I think, fine also. But again, what Jordan Henderson does and what he got a chance to show last night was that range of passing. There's a couple of just quick through balls over the top, a few rangy crossfield balls as well. It's not, I think Gerrard did it for effect a lot of the times, and I think Jordan Henderson has in the past tried to show off a bit too much, maybe to try and win some people over, but I think he's playing like a man who's comfortable in his own skin at the moment.
Yeah.
And look at the team he's in at Liverpool. He's playing for the European Cup finalists, very nearly played for the champions of Europe in the midfield as captain.
Yeah.
And he's going to England and he's playing in a team that's got Kyle Walker at centre-half, and, you know, still got Gary Cahill there, and
Harry Maguire
playing centre-back, and, you know, Livermore, fighting with Livermore for a place in the squad. And he must be like, now I'm one of the best players in this team.
Yeah.
I am. And that's what I thought really shone for me, was that he just looked, again, totally effortless, totally cool, totally at one with himself, with his role and his position.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I think part of the problem has been for Liverpool fans is he's lived in Gerrard's shadow, which has been unfortunate for him. And maybe it's the same for England fans if they've watched Gerrard for the past 10, 15 years and they think he's capable of doing the same thing, but they obviously don't understand his play. One thing that we mentioned this morning in the kitchen was the fact that he's not a captain anymore. Mm-hmm. Now, initially, I wasn't pissed off with it because I don't really care about England, but I didn't realise the amount of pressure.
I was a bit annoyed with that he didn't get the nod because, again, he's Liverpool's captain. Yeah. Harry Kane is not Spurs' captain.
Yeah.
But they went with him.
But the pressure that's taken off him now, and it's all on Harry Kane to be a leader of men, and Southgate's been plugging it. Like, you know, that's what he wants to do. That's his role. Yet last night that we saw, Henderson was dictating players what to do and where to play. And
getting in the referee's face.
Yeah, Maguire went up far left and Henderson just filled his slot. Like, no problem. Like, that's kind of what a leader. I mean, we could be compared to Gerard Carragher this morning.
Yeah.
Fine, if it takes the pressure off him, he's not going to be a scapegoat for England getting knocked out the group stages of how far they'll fucking get, I don't know. But
yeah. No, I agree. And I think the thing is with Harry, there's a lot of pressure that comes with the England captaincy. And I think, unfortunately, because of how uneducated a lot of people are with footy and modern footy as well and what was required of roles, it's too hard for someone in Jordan Henderson's position to win people over because he's had it with Liverpool. How is he supposed to win over people who don't really watch his performances?
Yeah.
You know, because he doesn't stick enough in the top bin. Because he's not there. You know what I mean? We actually saw him there more in one game for England than we've seen for the vast majority of Liverpool's season. He had a great shot. It was pretty nice.
It's how I got excited yesterday.
Well, yeah. But you know, it's far easier for Harry Kane to shoulder the burden of the pressure of captaincy because odds are he's going to score in a game because he's really good at scoring goals in games, and he scored two. Then it's totally and I think the decision to give him the captaincy was totally and utterly vindicated because as we were saying, as you were alluding to, it's a target on Henderson's back, I think, for the media, because people will look at it and go, well, what's he doing? Well, you know, people start to question his all-round contribution when he's got the captain's armband, whereas people, you cannot question Harry Kane with the captain's armband when he scores a goal.
Yeah.
Even though you should, because you should be looking and going, your captain should be doing that, because people at the base level want to see captains leading the team. And if you're the guy who's winning football matches, then for most people, that's enough. That's enough leadership.
That's the difference. There's different types of leadership, isn't there? And he's doing it through performance, not through shouting at people. And you've got the balance of having both in your team and just one being basically the pin-up boy with a thing on his arm. Fine.
Yeah.
go and do it.
I'm chuffed and I hope Henderson does. I hope he continues to do what he does. And I believe that he will because, like I say, this is a... It's a big thing. He's at a World Cup and he's earned the right to be there. You know, he's had a little bit of competition. He's had that little battle with Dier for the starting 11 as well. You know, I can't see. There's no way in my head anyway that Henderson would come out for any other reason other than just to make sure he's fresh for when you get to, you know, hopefully when they get out of the groups and you get to the knockout stage.
The other thing as well is he's been captain for club and country for so long. He's not got that through charity, has he? I was like, oh, he's a really nice guy, but I think of ball making captain. There's a reason he's got qualities behind it that we don't see.
Yeah. Well, he keeps getting picked by managers who, you know, have had varying degrees of success in their careers, but some of them have had good. You know, Jürgen Klopp's a very, very good manager. We love the bones of Jürgen Klopp. We constantly talk about how he's getting it right and all the good things he's doing. Doesn't have to give Jordan Henderson the captain's armband, just know it to him.
Yeah.
You know, it was Henderson absolutely nothing. Look at the players that he's shipped out. He's got no problem. People may say he's a bit sentimental at times or whatever. I think people confuse what he does during a season with what he does in close seasons. He keeps faith with people when the season's on because you can't not.
Battle the confidence, can you?
Your player, player, why would you ruin someone who actually has got the ability to do stuff for you on a football pitch? But I don't think he holds sentiment when it comes to the transfer market. If he thinks he can upgrade, he'll go out and upgrade. There's players that we've liked. There's players you could have, like, let's use Joe Allen as an example of this. Joe Allen is a perfectly fine Premier League level midfielder, and Joe Allen would have had, we could have done with Joe Allen in the last 10 games of this season. Now, I know we're a couple of years removed from leaving, but he could have done a job for us over the years. But he's just, he doesn't care. He'll find people who fit. And at the moment, it looks like he thinks Henderson fits.
Attitude's a massive thing for him as well. Yeah. We've seen people that have been of good quality. And if you didn't, head's not, Emre Can, prime example, or Coutinho, like, if you're not willing to be part of what we do and have the right mental attitude for what this club wants. Yeah. Don't care how good you are or what your price is. See you later.
Yeah, we're not. Look at Paul Pogba, right? And the different players. I know they both play in midfield and what have you. And look, I think people over egg the pudding of he's crap or whatever. Paul Pogba's not crap. No. And he in his performances have been absolutely fine by and large in terms of goals and assists return and what have you. But that he's playing in a team that's got loads of really big individuals, and he is a really big individual. Jordan Henderson has gained the level of consistency in the last, when he's been on the pitch, he's been able to get himself physically on the pitch. Nobody ever complains about Jordan Henderson's attitude. Nobody ever complains about his work rate. Nobody ever complains about his endeavour. Some teams need to have world-class players in every position. Jordan Henderson's not world-class, and I don't think he ever will be, but he doesn't need to be.
No.
Because he's a very good footballer, he's a very intelligent footballer, and he combines that with sheer determination, bloody mindedness, and work rate and everything in between. He shares a purpose for what we do, and he does it very well, and he seems to be doing it for England. So again, long may that continue.
That everything you just said is summed up for me, the fact that when he got sent off against City in 13-14, and obviously everyone knows what happened afterwards, but I still hold that in high regard as part of the reason why we missed out on that title, because we missed him so much for three games for all the qualities you've just said.
It's just one of them things. If we'd signed him from Croatia, or if it was Czech, or he was Belgian, or he was whatever, we would give him loads more time. I've said this on this podcast before. We just don't like English lads.
No.
We just don't. No. We like Scouse lads, and we like foreign lads. And so, sometimes we hate all of the above, but, English lads, I think, have the hardest time trying to win Liverpool fans over, because they just do. It's not glamorous. There's nothing exciting about signing an industrious midfielder from Sunderland. There's just nothing that gets the blood racing about that. Whereas we all creamed our pants over Roberto Firmino, even though none of us had seen anything that he'd ever done.
Yeah.
But he was just this lad who was a Brazilian forward. That's the thing, It's why, like, Adam Lallana's still won loads of people over, whereas he's a tremendous footballer. It just is what it is. And
I think for non-Liverpool fans and England fans, I think you need to, listen to each other in terms of, we watch Henderson on a regular basis. I think we know more about that.
Yeah.
I was talking to Baz the other day, and I was slagging off Jordan Pickford, and he's actually, I watch him week in, week out. And I kind of thought, well, yeah, if you know more than me, it's like, who might say?
Yeah.
The
problem is the banter spills over into stupidity, and it's very easy just to be bloody-minded and just why I totally write it off, because who cares? Here's the thing. People do it with their own players in their own clubs. Like, my uncle's great for this. Just hates everyone. Until they actually totally and utterly and unequivocally prove themselves to be brilliant.
Yeah.
And then he just gets to enjoy them being brilliant.
Reverse psychology.
Odds are, if you just say someone's crap, you're going to be proven right, because it's a very, very small percentage of footballers who actually make it to the genuinely elite level. So, if you just say everyone's crap, you're probably going to look like loads about footy eventually. That's the one thing about this, and I hope this is why England is set up a bit differently. And I'm also glad there's not, like, Lallana's not there and Milner's not there and Oxlade-Chamberlain's not there to some extent, because it's just more pressure.
Yeah.
The media will, they're being fined so far, but they will look to tear people down, and all it's going to take is Jordan Henderson missing a penalty for England.
Yeah.
No one will look at, it takes massive bollocks to step up and take a penalty. You'd only ever get remembered as the lad who missed a penalty, and I hope that, I think he will have the bollocks to take one at some point. I hope he does, and I hope he fucking smashes it in and does his scream celebration, slide, shirt ripped, all that kind of stuff, and everyone gets to love him as much as I do.
I bet mainstream media were dying in the last 10 minutes of that Tunisia game last night, waiting just to go, oh, he's been shit, he's not done this, he's not done that, and just go, down.
Well, this is it. You know, all there's plenty of players who underperformed in that game, and they don't need to be talked about so much because it's not important. Because England showed what they can do in an offensive sense, and they won the game.
Yeah.
Despite some trying circumstances. Sound. Yeah. Continue on them, Vades, and they'll be all right. Before we crack on, we were taking a load of your questions before we wrap up. But we did the Liverpool latest podcast on Monday. Talked a bit about Rhian Brewster. And some transfer stuff as well. It's exclusive for people who subscribe on the redmentv.com. Here's a little clip.
The process for the VAR, I thought, was fine. I've seen people going, well, if they're going to use it, why don't they stop it? No, they're doing it right.
Yeah.
Let the game play. Let the video referees watch something. And if they see something that's worthy of it, you contact the referee and he goes, right, now I'm gonna stop the game. Because if you end up with the debacle that was Liverpool versus West Brom, where you're stopping it, if every time someone goes, check a VAR, check it, okay, I'll check, stop, you know, it makes it two stop start.
Definitely better than that.
Exactly. So, but the problem remained for me is that two things, what the referee was then shown, but also I put a tweet out saying, you've seen it all back, you've seen the VAR, I'm paraphrasing, but do you think it was a penalty?
And the massive discussion.
It was 50-50. Yeah. It was 50-50 yes and 50-50 no. I was like
a couple of thousand votes or something.
How is that?
Yeah.
It's not clarified anything. All you've done is make the wrong decision in a different way.
Yeah.
Because honestly, like I say, I've seen this to Ben before. If the referee just plays on, which he has done, he's played on, and the play's moved down the field, you don't bat an eyelid, because every one of us, I think, in normal time went, good tackle.
Yeah.
The commentators all said, good tackle. We were all happy for the play to move on. I think maybe it gets looked at half-time analysis, but I don't think people really go. And then what they do in half-time analysis, they go, maybe, oh, they find the angle where he touches it, and they go, oh, no, not a pen. And that's a talking point, and it's done.
Yeah, as I've mentioned, and as I will continue to mention, because it's worth mentioning, the redmentv.com, the people who subscribe to that website make everything possible. We do some great stuff on there. We've got a podcast coming up this week with Neil Jones, formerly of The Echo, now of Goal.com, podcast with Liam Prescott as well. We had an exclusive with Dave Maddock the other week. Melissa Reddy was in last week. That actually held itself really well, because we did a lot about the role of journalists in new media and how you report around transfers and embargoes and stuff. So it's not actually totally specific to players and news that's dated. If you want to get a little bit of an insight into why the embargoes are set at 10:30, how the Northwest sort of journalist pack works together when reporting Liverpool news, football news and transfers, that kind of stuff, and a little bit of the stresses and strains that go with it. Really, really interesting stuff with the fabulous Mel Reddy. So
James Pearce next week too.
And James Pearce. Piercy, PSO, I don't think anyone's ever called him, any of them, but he will be in next week as well, so yeah, get involved, start a 3-month trial, see how you get on with it, and listen, if you're listening and you're watching, and you do have the trial, tell people about it in the comments. It always helps, a little bit of positive word of mouth, never hurt. So yeah, please do, thank you very much. Crack on then, Dylan O'Rourke 1. This is more one for me, Ross, because you've not been here too much. But I will get your take on this anyway.
I've written two things down.
Amazing. Following the channel's birthday, what has been the best and worst moment over the years? Yeah, so people saw it on Twitter. It's been 8 years since we uploaded our first new video to YouTube. So we did a pilot of what it was just called, The Red Men at the time, for LFC TV back in summer of 2009. It didn't get picked up. It sat around for a while. I chopped it all up because some of it was horrendous. It had like the guy who edited it for me put a load of like canned laughter in, and it was the worst. So I had to cut around all that. But I put they're all up there, by the way, if you've never seen them.
Watch.
They are terrible.
Gary Neville balloon one.
Gary Neville balloon. Lart attack. Yeah, I forgot all about that. There's some really, the channel was very different in the early days. I miss that old channel. I miss us being able to just tit around and jump around and dive around and do funny sketches and stuff. But here we are. So we started doing new videos around the South Africa World Cup 2010, and yeah, it's great, and you know, always one of those things that people should remember. If they really like doing stuff, they should just push on and try it, no matter how stupid an idea it seems at times. But yeah, best and worst moments. It's funny that there's a my favourite expression of the season has been recency bias, and it's easy to remember the cool stuff, and we've had so much good stuff happen in the last 12 months that it's very hard for me to, it's a long, I've worked on this a long bloody time. The Dizzy Penn stuff with Coutinho and Sterling was always a highlight, but honestly, Jürgen Klopp telling me that he watches what we do, I still haven't gotten over that.
No.
So that's one of my highlights. Go on, Ross. You've been with us a year, and I think, I know. You know, what's...
Well, for sure, I've been given opportunity and getting a job here for...
Sure.
A bit of brown nosing. The Live Sky Sports stuff. Yes. Just mugging off Gary Neville constantly.
Yeah.
Which was one of my favourite things.
Yeah, so yeah, those who don't know, we got invited to do a Man United preview with full-time Devils at Anfield with Neville and Carragher, and we just, across the board, destroyed Gary Neville on live TV. It was great.
Yeah. It took it in turns. It was good. And the second one was when we went to Liverpool for the Christmas stuff, just to go and take some photos of merch and give us fucking Christmas dinner.
Give us a... Yeah, that was
it. Monday afternoon.
Yeah, got a little chat with Daniel Sturridge, a bit of eggnog. Yeah. That was it. It was nice, yeah. There's some random stuff. I remember someone putting a post on a forum about 7 or 8 years ago, maybe, of saying, have you seen this thing? It's called thing called the Red Men. They've not been going long, and they're already getting interviews with Gerrard and Carragher. We're going to start our own one, and it's going to be bigger, and it's going to be better. And the person who showed me the post, I just said to them, I just said, fair fucks to yous. Go ahead. Go ahead. Knock yourselves out. Because, like, I remember we got that Gerrard and Carragher interviews through Didier Mann's book launch. That was the first time we had Didier Mann come in our house, come in the back room of my house in the original, one of the original studios. You know, we fucking grafted our bollocks off, and they were the very small highlights. And it still is like that, you know, it's us here on the couches talking about the Reds. Every now and again, someone dangles a little carrot or something cool. And you just, I always say, just be nice to people and work hard, and things hopefully tend to work in your favour. But playing Pro Evo with Genie Wijnaldum was pretty cool. I enjoyed that. And to be fair, Loris Karius last season, even though he got himself chipped because Ancho he brought Gomez. Himself out. Ancho Gomez. Well, and...
Firmino.
Divock.
Oh, and Divock, well. Yeah.
It's been a few. It's been good. It's been a very good time had by all so far. If you've been subscribed to the channel for a while now, let us know some of your highlights and your best moments in the comments below. You should be able to stick links in. If you can stick links in as well for people, by all means do. If you want to go back and laugh at some of the early stuff as well, some of the stuff that we thought was amazing at the time. We just used to think, if you put a good quality camera in front of you, you're just fine. Not thinking about sound quality or lighting or some horrendous. But look at it now. If you think it looks shit now, look how terrible it was.
Then come back to this and realise how good it is now.
Exactly, that's what I mean. Get some perspective. Yeah. Thanks very much for everyone who's helped us along the way. But yeah, been a wicked ride and not over yet. Joe T. Pridgeon, favourite away kit, first and foremost.
I've got two. So 96-97, the cream one.
The Ecru.
Yeah.
Yes.
That one. And then the year before that, sorry, the one with the... like turquoise squares patches on it.
Yeah, like the green check one. Yeah. To be fair, I've got both of those shirts. I had both of them shirts at the time, and I can't stand the quarters one, even though it is fairly iconic.
Yeah.
I mean, because we lost the FA Cup final in that kit.
I think it was around that time. That's when I started getting into football, was 96, 97. It's like the kind of the first ones I can remember.
The two for me, because you actually just reminded me of it, I've got it outside there. 93-94 away. So it's white with green arms and the black three stripes on the side. Pure vintage Fowler for me. I think we played Crystal Palace first game of the season and beat them like 4-5 or whatever at Selhurst Park. First ever away game as well. Love that kit. Other than that, all the grey away kits. So 88, 89, 90, and then 08, 09. When we brought that 08-09 kit out, and it was a throwback to my, because that was like my first season as a Liverpool fan, 89. I was like, this. And then obviously we went and smashed Man United at Old Trafford in that one as well. So yeah, definitely that. And he says, will we ever have Nike as our sponsor? I'd be over the moon if and when that happens. Now, Nike's wool, mate.
They're all the same.
And Nike are the worst. The absolute worst. I would honestly rather have Yule Sport. Did you see that Costa Rica kit? It's nice. People go mad. Nike are to kit makers what FIFA is to football games, what Cristiano Ronaldo is to attacking players. It's just just glossy and saccharine and just, yeah, just a bit corporate. Like, I know Adidas is a massive corporation, by the way, and I know New Balance is too, but...
You can associate that with Liverpool, though, can't you? And it's obviously a massive round there. The total 90 stuff that Nike did around the early 2000s, like, it was all over that, the boots and that were good, but it's like...
Don't get me wrong, yeah. It's not like Nike don't have iconic kits. I've literally ordered the Brazil Ronaldo 98 shirt, and they made some great, you know, they made some great boots and some decent footies and stuff along the way, like, but some of the stuff they've done for Man United I've not been down with. Now, here's the thing, I'd have Adidas all day long. The last time they had Liverpool's kits, they made some terrible Liverpool kits. Like, they made some really nice ones, yeah, but like that 2010 home kit, which they tried to ape the 1990 one with the flex, it's just ill-fitting and crap.
Yeah.
They made that horrendous white and blue, pale blue one with like the sash on it, which should have just been red and it would have been absolutely fine, by the way. Some of the away and third kits, they made some mad decisions. Not as mad as the early days of Warrior, mind you, but the problem with Adidas and Nike to some extent, but more Adidas because Nike template too much, is that you look at Bayern Munich. I would have had pretty much every Bayern Munich kit as Liverpool's kit, apart from maybe this season's one. They've had some amazing kits that should have been Liverpool ones. Forest have had some amazing Adidas kits in this time as well. You've got to be one of the truly, truly elite clubs for Adidas to break the mould a little bit. When we last had them, our third kit was that black one with the red like square almost on the front of it. That was Real Madrid's goalkeeper shirt at the same time.
Brilliant.
And I was like, nah, well, there you go, that was done. And what happened, I'm tangenting this, by the way. Yes. What happened was our Liverpool's deal with Adi was coming up, and we said we want X amount of money, and Liverpool had dropped out of the Champions League at that point, and they turned around and just said, Liverpool don't represent value for money for us anymore. So they didn't offer us the right deal. And then Warrior came in and offered us mega bucks. And yeah, they had some crap kits. But now we're at New Balance, and I quite like the New Balance kits. I think they're doing a pretty decent job. And although they are, that the goalkeeper kits are always the same as Celtics and Portos and what have you, I think they do a good job of making the Liverpool kits stand out. And that's all we really want.
New away kit's growing on me.
Yeah, it's fine. I just don't want our kit to be Chelsea's kit in a different colour.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the problem. Okay, Kofi said, what superheroes would enter Liverpool's first 11 and why? But I've amended this to, just to keep it simple, pick one superhero to make Liverpool into title winners.
Okay, so I have written four of these down.
Okay,
Hulk, centre-back.
Okay.
It's obviously the standout one.
There's a red car waiting to happen, but carry on.
Yeah, whatever. Yoda at centre-forward, because you just think people think he's slowing in. Jump up and do some mad shit. For equality, Catwoman.
You fucking prick.
Yeah. Catwoman on the wing.
Right. I mean, just to clarify, yeah. I mean, we are talking about a world in which superheroes can play football.
Yeah.
Catwoman's a woman. She wouldn't be allowed to play in the.
Well, this is
in the first team.
Okay, so
aliens and so green monsters.
She's not
five.
Real, but she can play football because she's a woman. She can't play football.
No, she can play football, but she wouldn't be allowed to play. She's not male. She wouldn't be allowed to play in Liverpool's first 11. This is not sexist. Am I being sexist? This is just the rules of the game. Just the rules of the game.
She's a superhero. Superheroes can't play football.
She's not actually a superhero. She's a supervillain.
Yeah, she's a villain. Or Captain America in goal. Just because of shield and stuff like
that. I mean, again.
Bring his shield.
You're hitting upon the right idea, but the correct answer is Spider-Man in goal.
Yeah.
There would be no better goalkeeper superhero than Spider-Man. Agility and things stick to his hands.
Yeah.
And if he's going to miss anything, webs.
Yeah. And he can deal with concussion as well.
He does take a beating, doesn't he? And comes back stronger. Yeah, that's fine. Okay. And finally, Dan P096. I feel like we know the answer to this question because we've talked about him a little bit already. But Harry Maguire to LFC, would you take him? A lot of people have asked us this since his performance last night. And it was a great point made. I think it was made in the Facebook group. There's no shades of grey in people's analysis of Harry Maguire's performance for England. People thought he was either crap or he was the best centre-half they've ever seen. I tend to lean towards I thought he was a bit crap.
I thought he was crap and I wouldn't have him based on his performances and the fact that I think since we got Virgil van Dijk in, he's kind of like the big guy in defence and he does most of the work and he needs to have like Lovren just kind of mops up. You need someone with a bit of pace behind him and it wouldn't work. So like Hippier on show, that's exactly what that was.
I think
it doesn't suit it.
This is the thing, we did a bit of a discussion on this around Ball Street and Social Club. I believe in that, going back to our centre-back chat from earlier, look at what's around is he as good as Virgil van Dijk? No. Then what's the point?
Yeah.
You know, and you're right. I think you need someone who's just going to go and throw the body on the line. Maybe he's got a bit of that, like, but for me, he's...
Can throw his head on the line. It's massive.
Yeah, look, I think he's one of them. He's very... I think people think he's better than he is because he's massive and he's good for a big lad, isn't he? You know what I mean? Like, he's for basically a big fat lad. He's got a good touch and he's quite nimble and he's decent. And fine, look, if Man City want to take a big plunge on him, let them. Honestly, I mean, I sat in this room and slated stay all season long for creaming his pants about Johnny Evans. But when Johnny Evans is moving for £3 million,
yeah,
I'd rather have taken a punt on Johnny Evans for £3 million than go and spend 20 plus on him. He's just another one for me. He falls into that bracket of Michael Keane, you know, yeah, et cetera, et cetera. He's another one where if we were buying a centre-half, if we were just starting this project at Liverpool, like Everton are kind of doing at the moment, where you just got an influx of cash and you just got to go and buy it up. Players who aren't Sylvain Distan, players who aren't 35 years old and are about to fall to pieces, that's fine. Whereas if we're going to go on and get someone who to play in this first 11, he needs to be a significant upgrade on Dejan Lovren. And is he really? Yeah. So thanks very much for the question, but the answer from us is no. But if you disagree, let us know in the comments below. Listen, drop a like on the video if you're watching on YouTube. Leave us a 5-star review if you are listening to the podcast on any of the podcasting devices. As we've mentioned there, all the things that we've plugged today, the stuff that's behind the paywall, obviously people know us for video content, but the podcasting side of things, we've got you covered. So obviously we do this. Every single thing that we do in a podcast form, so you can integrate it into your native app. So if you've got Podcast Addict and what have you, go in there, put your feed in there, put your login details, and then you can listen to all of our exclusive subscriber content on your mobile, on the go, download it and get involved. So listen, there's no more of this worrying about your bandwidth costs. There's no way you don't want to look at our faces. You simply don't have to. You can just listen to our dulcet tones. Thank you very much for watching and listening this week. Walk on.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.